This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Habakkuk. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Habakkuk, chapter 2, with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
When Habakkuk writes, the middle of the 7th century BC, Assyria was actually at its zenith. The Assyrian Empire was as strong as it would ever be. There was no reason for Habakkuk to suspect a change in global politics. Yet the Lord tells Habakkuk to hold on to his hat, for the mighty Assyrian Empire is about to go down, and the upstart Chaldeans or Babylonians will rise to power. And that is exactly what happened. History records it. Babylon did conquer Assyria in 612 BC. Then defeated Egypt at the Battle of Carchemish in 605 BC. You see, here's God's plan. He's going to bring this band of Babylonian warriors and their king Nebuchadnezzar to power to judge the evil in Judah and to address the prophet's complaint. Verse 11 continues God's prediction of this future Babylonian kingdom. Then his mind changes and he transgresses. He commits offense, describing this power to his God. After spending the last several weeks in Daniel, we know the story of Nebuchadnezzar. He was a mighty king. He was chosen. He was actually used by God. Here, this king, you remember Nebuchadnezzar was called the tool of Yahweh. But he all let it go to his head. Nebuchadnezzar got proud. He got the big head. You remember in the king's vision that Daniel had interpreted, Nebuchadnezzar was the head of gold. But he wasn't content with being the head of gold. For when he raised up an image in the plain of Dura, guess what? It was solid gold. In other words, he wanted greater than God intended. He didn't want to just be the head. He wanted to be the entire image. He wanted his kingdom to be one that would rule forever. You recall in Daniel chapter 4, verse 30, we're told that Nebuchadnezzar one night, he took a walk out on the balcony of his palace. He was looking out over the city of Babylon, and he said to himself, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty?" And God must have been eavesdropping in as he talked to himself. And God was offended by his pride, for God was the one that had raised him up. God brought madness upon the king, drove him crazy. He had a temporary bout of insanity. Nebuchadnezzar was humbled. He was brought to his knees. You remember he was led out into the fields. He roamed like a wolf, you know, for a number of years. The God of Daniel made Nebuchadnezzar successful. And yet the king had taken the credit. God had risen him up and made him victorious. But he had elevated himself with pride, and God knows how to humble the proud. Never forget that. God knows how to humble the proud. But here's what happens to Habakkuk. It's interesting. God's explanation here raises more questions in Habakkuk's head than it really answers. For Habakkuk now asks God in verse 12, "Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment. O rock, you have marked them for correction." Habakkuk understands that God is going to judge Judah's sin. He thinks that's a good thing. It needs to be done. God has marked Judah for correction, but he says, "You are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he?" Now, this is what Habakkuk just can't get. Why would God judge the Jews at the hands of a people like the Babylonians who were more wicked than the people that were being judged? See his problem? Yes, the Jews had declined morally. Yet compared to these idolatrous, barbaric Babylonians, they were still choir boys. Habakkuk is thinking, God, you might be at work, but what you're doing now just doesn't make sense. In the beginning, Habakkuk wondered. He wondered why God seemed inactive, and he discovered that God wasn't inactive. God was at work. But now he wrestles. Habakkuk wrestles with why God seems so inconsistent and why he would use such a wicked heathen nation like the Babylonians to judge his chosen people, Judah. Verse 14. Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? In Habakkuk's mind, it's as if history has gone berserk. He's wrestling with what he sees as inconsistencies. I know there is this holy, righteous God. I know he's behind the scenes. I know he's calling the shots. But this is not the way I imagine him to work. Have you ever thought the same? Of course you have. It looks like to me, from the way history is unfolding, that circumstances are occurring randomly, that nothing is making much sense. Henry Ford said the same thing as Habakkuk, but just in three words. He said, history is bunk. That's what Habakkuk is suggesting here. He's wrestling with the rhyme and reason of history. Is it bunk, or is God truly in control? I'm sure you've heard the play on words. History is his story. Well, is that really true? Or is history just an unguided chain of random events and accidents? Verse 15. They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their dragnet. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet, because by them they share their sumptuous and their food plentifully. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? Again, Habakkuk is moaning the Babylonians. Is it right for them to prey on nations like a fisherman goes out and catches fish? They get hungry, and so they catch a few fish, then they thank their false gods for it and have a sumptuous meal, then only to get hungry again and go back for more and create more battles and more warfare and so forth. Is this the way it really works? He's asking. See, Habakkuk is thinking, it's just not like God for him to allow a wicked, proud nation like the Babylonians to devour another more righteous nation like Judah. At the end of chapter 1, we've got a prophet who is perplexed. He's trying to square what he sees God do with who he knows God to be. And sometimes that can be tough. At times, God works in ways that are mysterious to us. And so here's what he does, chapter 2. I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I am corrected. What do you do when God doesn't make sense? When life goes haywire, when all your conclusions end in confusions, when you can't reconcile horrible circumstances with the hands of a loving God, what do you do? Do you abandon what you know of God and start jumping to the wrong conclusions? Or do you seek the Lord? Do you seek after the Lord? Habakkuk decides to ascend into the tower and wait on God. You see, rather than jump to conclusions, Habakkuk climbs to get the right perspective. I want to say that again. Rather than jump to conclusions, he climbs to get the right perspective. I love this. The prophet ascends to the top of the wall. He climbs to the towers of Jerusalem. He gets on top of the walls of the ancient city. He gets alone to hear from God. Rather than draw false assumptions, Habakkuk gives God an opportunity to explain himself. He's even open to correction. He wants God to set him straight if need be. He's no doubt confused. But rather than get haughty, Habakkuk gets humble. Why is it when we're confused, we get haughty? We get arrogant. We get proud. We think we know it all. No, he was confused. But rather than get haughty about it, he got humble. He acknowledges that he doesn't know all that there is to know about God, that he can be wrong. Habakkuk climbs on his knees. And my friends, that is the highest anyone can climb, is when you climb on your knees. He seeks God's perspective. Hey, whenever life throws you a curve, you have a choice to make. You can jump or you can climb. You can jump to conclusions and draw the wrong conclusions about God and about your circumstances, or you can climb spiritually and have a conversation with God. This is also the issue, of course, in the book of Job. You remember for 39 chapters, Job and his pals, they jumped to all kinds of conclusions. Wrong conclusions, bizarre conclusions. It's all about jumping to conclusions for 39 chapters. It's only in the last five chapters of the book of Job that Job settles his heart and reacquires some humility and listens to God and lets God speak. Finally shuts up long enough to let God speak. In moments of perplexity, you can fold up your faith, you can give up on God, or you can fortify your faith, and you can grow in God. And here Habakkuk chooses the latter. He literally chooses the latter. And he climbs to the top of Jerusalem's walls, into the tower, to hear from his God. Now, before we leave this verse, I want us to notice four attitudes that Habakkuk employs in seeking God in crisis times. It's a good model for us. You see, it's possible to pray, it's possible to seek God, and yet God not answer because we've got the wrong attitude. Notice in this verse Habakkuk's fourfold attitude. I'm going to give you four words: determination, then isolation, then humiliation, and then expectation. First, pay attention to the prophet's determination. Habakkuk says, "I will stand my watch." You hear a note of determination, a note of resolve in those words? I will stand my watch. Implied is that Habakkuk is not coming down until he hears from God. You know, so often we don't get answers to our prayers because we give up too easily. Moses fasted 40 days and nights before God spoke to him. If we don't get an answer in 5 minutes, we're ready to throw in the towel and conclude that nobody's at home. In Jeremiah 29, verse 13, God baits the hook. He says, "You will seek me and find me when?" When? "You search for me with all your heart." He rewards determination, not half-heartedness. Well, second, notice the prophet's isolation. Habakkuk climbs to the top of the ramparts. He goes up on top of the walls of Jerusalem, into the tower. Whenever I'm in Jerusalem, man, you want to find me? Go to the walls. I love to walk on top of the walls of Jerusalem. I've done it many, many times now. Whenever our tour arrives in Jerusalem, I always try to make the walls our very first stop. The first thing we do in Jerusalem is a walk on top of the walls. It's so much fun. And it's amazing how peaceful, how quiet it is on top of the walls, especially in contrast to the chaos in the streets below. You go through the Damascus Gate and you're walking through the streets of Jerusalem. At street level, it's hard to focus on God. It's hard to focus on anything when you're on those streets. You're worried about somebody running up and snatching your camera or picking your pocket. It's very disturbing down on street level. But when you get up on top of the walls, there are no distractions. It's almost like you've climbed above. It's almost like now it's just heaven. You in heaven. You in God. It's a wonderful experience. You know, God speaks to us in a still small voice. I think that means that we have to quiet ourselves to hear him. That means it's necessary, if we really want to hear from God, to find a quiet place, to maybe find a quiet time, to certainly cultivate a quiet heart. Do you have a quiet place where you go and seek the Lord? I hope you do. Do you have a quiet time? Maybe it's after you get all the kids in bed. Do you give God a little time at the end of the night? Maybe it's before everybody wakes up in the morning. You need a quiet place. You need a quiet time. You especially need to cultivate a quiet heart. Reminds me of the Indian from the reservation. He was visiting a friend in New York City. They were walking down the street when the Indian stopped and he said to his friend, he says, "I hear a cricket." His friend replied, "That's so silly. You can't possibly hear a cricket in this noisy place." No, the Indian, he insisted. He said, "No, I hear a cricket." As a matter of fact, he walked over to one of these concrete planters there on the street. He dug his hands into the soil, and amazingly, he pulled out a tiny little cricket. His friend was amazed. But the Indian said to him, he said, "It's really not such a big deal, for we all train our ears to hear what we want to hear." He said, "Let me demonstrate." He reached into his pocket, and he pulled out a handful of coins. And he suddenly tossed those coins down onto the street. And everybody within a block turned and looked in that direction. Hey, everybody in New York City recognizes the sound of money. The Indian had made his point. We hear what we want to hear, don't we? We hear what we've trained our ear to hear. Habakkuk isolated himself to hear the voice of God. And then thirdly, notice the prophet's humiliation. Habakkuk expects a rebuke. Now, usually when we expect a rebuke, we don't want to pray. We don't want to spend time with God. But Habakkuk goes to God knowing that chances are he's going to get rebuked. He's going to get corrected. He wants to be corrected. He says, "To see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I am corrected." He wants to be corrected. You see, correction isn't always easy to handle. It's the rare person humble enough to see the value in correction. But correction is so important. We should always want to go to God. Our prayer should always be, "Lord, to see what you would want to say to me and to answer when I am corrected. Lord, I need to be corrected every day. You know, I want to be like Jesus, and I'm not there yet. I need to be corrected." We need to seek correction and love correction and want correction. Here, Habakkuk, he wants to be corrected because he's sure he's the one in error. He knows the problem isn't God. It has to be him. And this is a safe assumption for us, is it not? Isaiah 55, verse 9 reminds us, "As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." You see, when God doesn't make sense, it's safe to assume it's due to a lack of our understanding, not any weakness on the part of God. We're the ones that need correcting, not God. And then notice fourthly, Habakkuk's expectation. The prophet says, "I will watch to see what he will say to me." Not what he might say to me, not what I hope he says, but "I will watch to see what he will say to me." That means that when you pray, do you pray with pen and paper in hand? When you pray, do you really expect God to speak to you? You should. Whenever I pray, I sit down with my Bible, with a piece of paper and a pen, because I'm expecting God to speak to me. Are you ready to receive? Hebrews 11, verse 6 tells us, "Without faith, it is impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and then check this out, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. God expects to be expected. That's the truth. He wants an expectant heart. God expects our expectation. And this is what happened to Habakkuk. After he ascended to the ramparts, verse 2 tells us, "Then the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets that he may run who reads it." God's answer to Habakkuk was not only for Habakkuk, but for everyone else as well. He was to emblazon it on a billboard. He was to write it plainly on the tablet so others could understand God's truth, then apply it, and then run with it. He says, "For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry." God is warning Habakkuk that he'll have to wait to see the completion of what he's about to be shown. But be patient, Habakkuk. God's word will be fulfilled. As we're told in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 12, it's through faith and patience that we inherit the promises. Some people have a lot of faith, but they don't have much patience. Some people got lots of patience, but they don't have any faith. It takes both faith and patience to inherit God's promises. Remember, the farmer never reaps in the same season that he sows. He sows his seed. Then he has to endure that long, hot summer with nothing to show for his efforts. But if he's patient, if he doesn't sell the farm in frustration, in due season he will reap if he faints not. He just needs patience. And so do we. If we're to grow spiritually, we need patience. We never reap in the same season that we sow. Always remember that. That's why we need endurance. We need to follow God. We need to continue to serve him. We need to be persistent. And then with patience, we'll reap the rewards. And then verse 4. "Behold the proud. His soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith." Did you hear about the guy who thought he was so great? He was so cool. He was so fantastic. He was the greatest person on the earth. He had himself cloned. He thought this world would be a better place if it were more of me. But after a while, this clone learned some dirty language. Became quite a vulgar creature. Well, the man hated to be around himself now. This guy always spewing out ugly things. And so one day he just had enough of the clone. He pushed the clone off the cliff. Just pushed him off the edge of the cliff. Well, the man was immediately arrested. He was charged with a felony. And what was his crime? Making an obscene clone fall. Making an obscene clone fall. Yeah, you get it? Yeah. But it was pride that got the man in trouble. And you see, pride was the sin of the Babylonians. It's why Babylon fell. The proud man always falls. But the just shall live by his faith. God will punish the wicked. He will reward the righteous, but the just shall live by faith. That means that along the way, situations won't always be clear. Life won't always seem fair. The life of the righteous will require faith.
We're delighted you tuned in today to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. The Minor Prophets is the series he's been diving into. Many times throughout history and still today, God speaks in undeniable ways. Some messages are hard to receive, while others are easier. The Old Testament prophets would agree that no matter the intended audience, the words must be said. Souls were at stake. Some were drenched in sin or ignorance. Others had very little faith. God assigned different prophets to be his mouthpiece to the people he loved. These messages of repentance, obedience, and future events are for us today as well. They're examples of God's faithfulness and love to all mankind and shouldn't go unnoticed. Whether you find yourself grappling with what God has told you or you're settled in your faith, we trust today's message was a bright spot in your day. If you enjoyed this message, would you let us know? Call 770-736-2828. That number again is 770-736-2828. Before we go, we want to draw your attention to sandyadams.org. There, you'll find a wealth of information, not only about this ministry, but about resources that will help you grow in your relationship with Jesus. Thanks for listening to Sandy Adams Radio.